Welcome to A Course in Miracles. Okay, you know, we are going to meet this challenge yet again. And constantly it is your existence, what you know to be true, and that's false. And that you're welcome. This constant battle that you are experiencing, what you're witnessing every day in your lives, you're witnessing what you believe. Your body, time, space, they said something that hurt you, they shouldn't have said, things like that. Guilt belongs certain places. That little dance that you use with your mind every single day, every hour of the day, this is the block that's believed by you to be true. Therefore, since it's believed by you, and not because it's believed by him about you, no, it's what you believe. And what you believe about what he says about you. So guilt is needed. Defense is needed. Sympathy. Poor you. That was so unfair what happened to you today, Pam. BS from the healed mind. There are specific blocks to peace that we ourselves put in our lives on an hourly, if not minute by minute, basis. Please don't try to heal your mind all at once for the rest of your life. If you could do that, you would have done it long ago, because you'd be that close to enlightenment. You'd be teaching us.
Heal? I couldn't hear.
Heal, yeah. Heal your mind now for the rest of your life. It's much better idea to heal your mind from a very present block you can actually get your mind around. You don't know what the rest of your life is like. You don't know what challenges are coming. You don't even know where you came from. In fact, I'm pretty sure nobody here is actually in control of beating your own heart. And yet, all of our hearts are beating just fine. Huh?
I said kind of.
Yeah, yours isn't like this.
I don't know. I have such low blood pressure that I'm not sure it's doing anything.
The point is, we, with living in bodies, we're deeply, deeply involved in a lie.
See, almost every morning, moment of the day.
Very hard to challenge that it's a lie, since it shows up every single day. In our emotions, in our feelings, in our thoughts. Guilt for this, innocence for that, unfair for this. With A Course in Miracles, we're trying to bust this pattern of thought that's closer to you than your own breath. That's why I love this book. It's so practical. We're dealing with something that you are constantly doing unconsciously. And yet, with this book and what we do here, you see how you are doing it consciously. You think you're a victim. You think the world is happening to you. And your job is to push it back and deal with it. It's obvious, right? Aren't you a victim of the world? Aren't you a victim of gravity? Isn't your body getting older? Doesn't it get hungry on a regular basis? You got to put water in and then let the water out later. Isn't that kind of the way it works? See what I mean? You're a victim to perception. It just keeps proving itself as real, see? And yet here, every once in a while, with Course in Miracles and your other spiritual studies, you learn that, yeah, it looks real, but I'm starting to think it's not true. That's where a spiritual awakening happens. It is what we are here to promote, is a freedom from your addiction to the body and its limits. Okay, now, how do you do it? How do you move from the overwhelming witness to darkness, limits, even death, or unhappiness, or unfairness, or jealousy, or hatred, to the light of acceptance, innocence, joy, sharing, desire to share even. That's what we're working on right now, starting tonight. The paragraph that we're reading, we've just spent a whole bunch of weeks, I think it's over 2 months, on the attraction to guilt. And its insidious nature of making you somehow feel better when he did it. Or when you claim that you admit that you did it. Because you know what? You really could have done better. You should have done better. Why don't you take the responsibility, Luann? You're guilty. Somehow you're attracted to that. What? Woman! Right? But it's true, right? So that's what we've been working on very carefully for many, 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 many weeks now. So we're going to loosen up a little bit. We're going to look at how you shift away from this addiction. How you bring your mind back to love when it is not only addicted to guilt and hate as a sense of self-preservation, as a sense of mental health. You do these things. It's not like you're crazy, according to the world. How you'd shift away from that in those same situations back to love. Back to a connection or an ability to turn your mind over to the Holy Spirit instead of the unholy spirit. Tonight we're going to look at this switch over. Okay? Now, if all that was confusing, let me simplify it. We're talking about forgiveness now. The tool that would unhook your addiction. You know, we certainly have to understand the miracle, and those will come. But the work that is done, it's when you have been awoken to your own responsibility or to the actual innocence of somebody who's using your name with four-letter words, stealing things from you, but you understand their innocence as they call for love. But you have to somehow not have the thoughts of attack, the thoughts of judgment, show up anyway and be a victim to judging. Okay, that's what forgiveness does. We're going to be looking at that again tonight in a nice way, a very personal way. The way it's been phrased as we've been reading the last couple of weeks is that your ego has an idea of how to judge something, and it instantly sends out messengers about guilt, about attack. It sends out messengers to witness and come back showing the guilt is worthwhile and deserved, so that you're right. These are your thoughts of judgment. They are the messengers that your ego sends out, and when the thoughts come back with indeed he really did do it, he's a callous, careless, overbearing, whatever,
EOS.
POS, yes. Then you feel somehow stronger and attracted to the guilt you assigned to him. We know better here, and yet we still do it. So it's forgiveness, and the actual act of forgiveness. What is that? And that's what I want you to think about for the next few minutes. Just for tonight, right? Because we're zooming in now. I want you to get real practical. And I want you to think about what happens in your mind when you forgive, according to this book. Okay? When is forgiveness needed? What circumstance, kind of an idea of what might a circumstance look like when you think, I should be doing my Course in Miracles forgiveness about now? When is forgiveness justified? What is your part leading up to this moment when forgiveness is needed? What do you have to do to allow forgiveness to your awareness? What does it mean? I need do nothing in that moment. What happens in your mind during forgiveness? And if you would, just pick a word or a phrase that shows up for you tonight on what happens in your mind when you choose forgiveness. David, what happens in your mind when you're on that moment of forgiveness?
It's kind of like you just, you're very calm and peaceful, but just very nice and pleasant. And you're not seeing anybody as a sinner. You're kind of your bro. Somebody's your buddy.
So opposite of attack?
Yeah, there's no attack. Never.
Let's go to calmness. Yeah.
It's calm and happy and loving and no attack.
Yeah.
All that stuff that we were doing just gone.
Yeah.
Really nice.
Hey, what happens to your mind when there's forgiveness?
It's like it's just a lighter load. Like you think it's gonna. It just feels like a lighter load.
A lightening. Uh-huh. Really, isn't that true?
Yeah.
Isn't that true, everybody? There's a lightness of being that occurs, along with this sense of peace, which is justified.
Oh yeah, that was the other word.
Right.
True justice happens.
Right.
It's like a relief.
It's
like a relief because otherwise you're holding on to your whatever grievance it is, and when you get conceptually that it's not even it, whatever it is that's getting you isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
There's love and fear, and there's only really love, and mm-hmm. fear is just the call for love. Then it's like if you can stay there, go there, return there, remember to go there, it's easier. It's just easier.
Life is easier and lighter.
Yeah, it's a lot less painful, and it's a lot less stressful, and it's a lot less thought provoking, and it's just kind of like you kind of when you get it conceptually, it allows you to remain detached.
Detached
from the world or whatever.
Yeah, you bet. It is Billy's Buddhist teaching on attachment, the misery.
I think I shared this a long time ago, but I want to briefly say that that's how I got this. Was I had just come out of a relationship where I had just found out that this man I thought I was marrying had another whole life.
Mm.
And I had no idea, and we were all in a spiritual community and nobody knew, and it was just shocking for everyone. And the next night, someone said, we're going to read this thing called The Course. Do you want to come? And I thought, well, I don't want to be alone, so sure. Literally, I was like, whatever. And that night they talked about forgiveness.
Wow.
And I got it on such a deep level that I couldn't wait to say to him, I totally forgive you.
Wow.
And the next thing I knew, I got him returned to love, and we were talking about that, and within a few days.
Wow.
And it was so genuinely loving and cool.
Yeah.
And I could not have gotten this book had I not had something so profound to forgive, so fresh and so could have been debilitating for me.
Years. Yeah.
Oh yeah, could have been a game changer for me.
Yeah.
And instead it was like part of the, that was the gas for this car.
out of those ashes came a beautiful
without
bird.
Without a doubt. It was custom. It was like, otherwise I would have been, oh, cool, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But it was profound timing. And it was the forgiveness piece that was what was on the topic that night.
Nice.
So it was, and I cried and threw it away and da da da. Yeah. And then it was like the most profound click.
Yes.
That, okay, it doesn't have to be like anything. Anyway, thanks for letting me jump.
No, thank you. That was as tightly said as can be, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Enlightenment literally occurred.
Yeah.
Light her.
Yeah.
With your mind.
It went from, talk about a holy relationship. What that was about was him coming to truth with his life, with his whole community and his whole world. Like that was, you know, and then, and for me it was like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Witnessing your own power and freedom from what would have been hell.
Truly hell.
Darkness.
Bad.
Self-judgment.
I can add all the accoutrements up to why that was so bad, but
yeah, a whole list.
Bad. I was just barely.
There
how long
in,
ago was, excuse me.
That was in 2010.
Okay.
That's when I was first starting.
Yeah.
No, 20. By then it was 2011.
Okay.
And I was working in this place in Arizona at a raw spiritual community, having just lost. That's where I decided to go after my mom passed. So I was fully grieving, and we were all meditating together, and we were all doing, you know, we were in this spiritual community. But he had a whole baby and a whole thing and this whole other life that none of us 60 people knew about. And then it all kind of came to light in this really unexpected way, and I mean, he got cracked. And so, and then that, yeah, so it was a big deal, not just to him and I, but to a whole group of us. And I've been, so yeah, that's 6 years since I've been reading this line.
You've been a personal witness to the power in your life.
I mean, that was,
you can't turn back from a
because the next day I said to another sort of a guru of sorts at the time, you know, I said to this other man, I'm like, I just want to pack up my, and I was managing this raw kitchen, you know, and it was kind of a big deal to my world and loving that. And And I said to this man, I said, I just want to pack up my, I just want to go, like, today. I want to get out of here. I want to pack up my car and leave, like, now. And he just said, you can't. You're going to take all this with you. You have to heal this. And then I read about forgiveness. It was just like, boom, all in, like, 24 hours. It was like, okay. And then next thing you know, at 6 a.m., he and I are working together, and he's reading Return to Love, which, you know that book. Yeah. You know, and we're talking about all that. Within a short amount of time, and I wasn't faking it. It was like, it was awesome.
But still, there was tremendous power that you chose that path because the other path was right there.
Oh yeah, no,
you could have gone deep into that for a very long period of time. It says a whole lot about your courage and just about the nature of your being that you took the other road.
Thanks.
In the face of everything that said, now I really can be hurt and pissed off, and you could really deeply wallow in that, but you didn't. And I'm sure you did.
I did.
I know that was all present.
I did.
But you made this choice to deal with it.
But it wasn't about him. The grief turned into my own experience with, like, that's a whole different thing. It became more about, you know, my own journey, not about...
You were betrayed.
I wasn't betrayed. Yeah. It was like, no, he, you know, it became
so
a different...
Awesome.
So there was a different thing that came of it, which is fine, but it was... Mm-hmm. And I was sad, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you can't really get forgiveness until you got something big old on your plate.
Yeah, so like that's when I started meditation with, when is forgiveness called for?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's one thing to forgive somebody for cutting you off and whatever, these things that are kind of common, you know, but when it's a floor ripper kind of heart-wrenching thing, then it's like, what do you really got?
And with the world's forgiveness, you'd have to forgive him for doing something bad. That's not good. That's lying.
Yeah.
Him bad means guilty, period.
Yeah.
Of course, in miracles forgiveness, you forgive you for taking on the bad and screwing up your own life. That's totally different. But that's where it actually happens, right? In your head. Nice, thank you. Nice, well done. Stephen. Stephen.
When forgiveness is fully present, there's just, and you pointed to it, there's just like space. There's like not all this chatter, there's not, you know, there's just space. And then what seems to occur, like naturally arising in a space where there's no thing, where there's nothing,
yes,
is the presence of love. I'm pretty motivated to forgive people that have done something or that I don't even know that I've made a judgment about. I mean, I can, with maybe one exception, I can get on board with forgiveness because I'm clear that it, number one, has little to do with them. Will make no difference with them.
Yes.
And I'm the only person that's going to suffer for it.
Yes.
So I can get behind that when it's another person.
Ah.
When it's me, then it's a whole other story. It's like, you know, I mean, I can poke around at different things and different judgments I have about myself, and but then the comeback, the ego comeback is, you know, well, like, I know me, of course you, you know, of course you're a dumbass or whatever it is, you know, because I know, I'm in here, you know. So I struggle with that, but I had a little opening recently in that I could see the possibility of forgiving myself for having not forgiven myself. And that cracked the door open a little bit. So that's where I'm at with that.
Good,
try to crack the
door. So what happened in your mind? You're so busy judging yourself. What happens in your mind?
There's all kinds of evidence of it. You know,
I mean,
I can look around my world, my life, and there's all kinds of evidence that I fucked up.
You know, it's like, there's proof. just ask your ex-wife. There's proof.
Well, you mean all four of them?
No. Oh, you're good at that.
So yeah, that's not a huge source of it, but yeah, there's something to say for that. Yeah. You know, particularly when what I tell myself is they're all so much better off without me.
You know, oh man, where were you when we were chapter 16?
I'm in contact with three out of four. They all have great lives. They wouldn't have had that great life with me.
You were just stupid.
Oh my God, that's too funny.
So, but true forgiveness, when you allowed yourself to forgive yourself for not forgiving yourself.
Yeah.
Now we're getting to the level forgiveness works.
Yeah.
Right? Deep in your head, not out there.
Well, you know, I've gone days at a time working Ho'oponopono. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
So, you know, I've managed to go 3, 4, 5 days and really just work that more or less constantly. And it does seem to, like, flush out your brain.
Yeah.
You know, because all that other stuff is not going on if you're busy working it, you know?
Yeah.
And something like, so it does also speak to the fact that my brain is a fucking machine, and it just keeps going through all the motions a machine would go through with what it thinks is real.
Yeah.
And whatever might interrupt that, whether it's working Ho'oponopono or working a mantra, or, you know, some of this work, how you can take on being present to it moment to moment, the workbook, things like that, anything that interrupts that ongoing, constant, very well-known thought pattern seems to provide some space.
Yeah. There you go. Beautiful. Julie, what happens in your mind when forgiveness occurs?
I had a feeling or sensation that I couldn't put to words. It was almost like the gravity in a black hole, and I was like, what is this thing that I'm feeling and kind of seeing in my mind? But I think it's the, and then it kind of occurred to me, the drawing inward, because it's nothing out there. And and secondly, the, like, when everything's kind of coming together, being drawn in, it's that oneness. Because that's what's really occurring to me in my recent forgiveness opportunities, is that is truly, like, the responsibility that I have for this world that I've created. And that there is only one, and so
So it sounds like a little atonement is happening.
Yeah.
Right? And that
I don't have total words for it, but if this is all of what I am, then what could I be upset about? And so that's it's been very healing.
Nice. A surrender on the biggest order is called for with our Course in Miracles work. And when you start to take down the barriers in your mind about out there and in here, that is the atonement. The at one meant. It's not a physical thing. It's not a change at all. It's a recognition in your mind. It's very sobering. It's very peaceful. It's very spacious. It's very freeing. It's very lightening. Because it's true. You know you're moving toward the truth. Yeah. Good. Good. Carol, what happens in your mind with forgiveness?
I was thinking of it more as like a feeling of, oh yeah. And just,
yeah. Oh, yeah, I know, really?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
And it's just a complete release. You know, and
a recognition.
Kind of like a smile.
Nice.
You know.
A happy release. Turning back to what you already know. Oh, yeah. I don't have to be troubled with this. I don't have to trouble myself with this. Oh, yeah. Yeah. A recognition. Yeah. Re-knowing what you now know. In all situations, you know this, Carol. There's nothing for the rest of your life where these simple concepts do not apply. Either there's no place you can be trapped, or you're going to be trapped more places than you can imagine. It's very binary, isn't it? That's why I love that. Mm-hmm. Happy freedom and certainty that you explained just now. I don't have to trouble myself with this. Good, good. Stefan, what is forgiveness like for you in your mind?
I think things like, to me, like things start getting like constricted. I feel constriction, and then things are dim. Mm. And then with forgiveness, it's like the constriction goes away. It's like release. It's like being all tight, and then it's like spacious, like you said.
Mm.
And then it's like a light goes on. It goes from dim, and like a light goes on. Mm.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think. And I can even, like, and like my face starts getting like this when I'm like thinking about something and causing myself trouble or pain. I'm like, my face gets, and then it gets really, it's like it really gets dim.
Yeah.
And it's not even like dim, it's like dim in my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Like start to, things start to close.
It's like you're choking the blood right out of you.
Yeah. Thing and it's like dark and dim and it's all constricted. And then I can have forgiveness and let that go, then it's like, oh, relaxed. I'm like, there's spaciousness. And the light goes on.
Nice. Beautiful.
There's something to, the way you just said that, Stefan, there's something to being aware of our bodily responses. Like when fear is present, like where do you feel it? What's going on? What's it connected to? What, you know, I had an experience the other day where I can't remember what it was, but I was very acutely aware of my physical responses and how familiar it was. And I kind of started to look back, like, what was the first time I can remember having these responses, sort of trying to track that brain pattern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was kind of interesting. So I've just been giving that some attention rather than just physically experiencing fear. Mm-hmm. It's like I just pay attention. So, all right, so what are you actually feeling? Mm-hmm. You know, like where do I feel tight? Where do I sometimes I feel like my brain is spinning in my skull.
Mm-hmm.
I got lightness in the chest, you know, and something about just breaking it down like that.
Instead of why you're feeling uncomfortable, how you're feeling uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You're busting it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yes.
I didn't quite get it as busting it necessarily, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because if you're following it, then it will lead you and you will discover despair. But if you're busting it, you're trapping it and looking at it. You're outside of it, looking at it. You're not following it. You're watching it. Oh, look, my fists are all curled up. Oh, look, my eyes are all squinty. Oh, look, my neck is pulled into my shoulders. Oh, look, I feel like hitting something. That's causing a whole response of adrenaline. Look at this happen as it gets dimmer and darker. Wait, I could choose peace instead of this. I know I read that in Course in Miracles somewhere. Let me do that for a second, and I'll go back to being angry. Let's see what it... Oh, wait a minute.
I like there's no justification for anger.
Yes.
I try to go to that.
Nice.
As often as I can.
Nice. Yeah.
And, you know, just can't get past that. You
okay.
Know? wait. It says right there in the
book. Busted!
Look, I've been doing for God how many years now?
Yeah.
No, just figuring out, okay, let me figure this out.
Right, you, that, okay, that's
I'll wait for my turn here.
You're just busting it. You know, you're busting it. So, Luann, what's it like forgiveness in your mind?
Forgiveness has been...
Wait, can you tell us first? You've only been here for a couple of weeks.
I've been here since the 1st of December. You started on the obstacles to peace 5 pages ago.
Okay, 12 weeks. All right, 10 weeks. What is forgiveness in A Course in Miracles? Do you know? You can say, I don't know, because most people don't know even after 5 years of studying this book. Yeah. They can't say
I started off by thinking, I don't know, when you were doing a
yes.
little reading.
Good, good. Yes.
I said, I don't know what forgiveness is.
Good, good.
And I still don't know what forgiveness is. I do know some words that describe forgiveness, and the last part of it is what means the most to me. But as everyone was talking, I was saying, of course, all that's true. But it didn't mean anything to me until, I don't remember, somebody else over here was talking, and it finally came to me. Forgiveness, for me, is when I'm not making choices for myself. Hmm. I'm being led by some wonderful Christ-like creative source.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when I'm being led, I don't judge anybody because I am doing exactly what feels right for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if it feels right for me, then I don't have to judge anybody else because I don't have any feelings that make me need to judge anybody else. But if I were going to say what I was thinking at some part of it, beginning of when everybody was talking was, basically the only forgiveness I have when I'm not letting myself be pushed, pulled, or whatever, directed, is I need to forgive myself because it's none of it's about anybody else. It's all about my own thoughts about it.
That's it.
About what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's a really hard one because my definition of forgiveness until I came to this class, which was letting go of the desire for revenge or the desire to punish. And then the second part of that is by remembering the human condition. And the last part of that is beginning with my own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so beginning with my own human condition, I can say, you know what? I start off as an extension. I like to think of the word child of God.
Mm-hmm.
And given that, there's really nothing. And so did everybody else.
Yeah.
Everybody else did too. And when I'm being led, that's how I feel about it. Everybody else is on their own place.
Nice.
They're doing what they need to do in the moment.
Yeah.
They're being led. They may not know it, but they're being led too.
Okay.
As well as I am. And
good.
So forgiveness is just enjoying life because I'm not making decisions about it for myself.
I think you're going to find this very welcome work. And just as a Course in Miracles will be validating what you have described. It'll give you common language for it.
Okay.
It'll give you some very deep support to never abandon it ever again and help you teach it to others.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. Beautiful. Beautiful.
I love that.
Good, good. Brother John, what happens in your mind with forgiveness?
Well,
end of attack, I heard that.
Well, I start more and more nowadays, you know, and that's not a hell of a lot, but you know, when something makes me angry or upset or I think it's unfair, unjust, I'm watching the news, for instance.
Yeah.
I try to think that more than just forgiving whatever I'm seeing,
mm-hmm.
I have to realize, of course, that I am, you know, of course, projecting.
Yeah.
What I'm seeing for my own subconscious.
Big one.
Deep purposes, mm-hmm. whatever they may be.
Yeah.
Which is ultimately supposedly a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
And which is part of my living. All of my living. Mm-hmm. This life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to forgive myself for what I'm projecting, mm-hmm. and try to make it unnecessary to feel any of these negative feelings. Just to obviate those feelings, really.
Bust the negative feelings that are coming to haunt. Trap them. Look at them.
Because they just seem to justify more
don't
negative
they?
Feelings.
If you follow them.
Right. And so, which means you're going to, you know, create a big, big old mess, or even more of one that you're into.
Yeah. You make a bigger mess.
Yeah. In the moment, and then you're going to start judging and blaming. And it's just... You know, reinforces the whole process.
It's very heavy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not light at all.
You bring up a huge point, which is like that whatever's happening out there is by grand design that you're projecting,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I forget exactly how he said it, but that's been I feel is a challenge because there's times when I don't get how I called that in.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, hello?
Don't make me come up there kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Truly.
I don't want to meet a God that would do this.
Yeah.
I didn't do it.
I swear to God, like, bring it back to the story I already told. Like, I had, like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
I didn't ask for, I mean, I get that this came from that, but there's times where that's tricky.
No, that's why I get these head trips that I think, how could you not get a big head trip from other spiritual programs who say everything is done for a purpose?
Right.
And God is great, God is good, God's doing this to you for your own benefit.
That's how off and on over the 25 or 30 years I've danced with the Course, and once in a while I go, fuck you, God, I'm not on board with your bullshit.
You better! If you're studying this book correctly... This kind of thing better come up, and then if you stay with the book, you'll see how silly that statement just was.
Uh-huh.
God did this to me. Oh yeah, let me see. Let me wait till
I
find out.
Because it's like as much as you can take, and then it's like again, it's like there's those layers of grievances. It's like there's the stuff that doesn't seem that bad, and you can I get it.
Yeah.
Until everybody has, I think, a breaking point where it's hard to get it.
Well, I'm telling you, what John was just talking right now, he's saying, look, he's heard him say grasping with he's taking responsibility.
Yeah.
He's waking up.
Yeah.
By taking responsibility for what's his part. Now, that would not be his part sitting in the bag of skin over here.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. But also, sometimes I think, well, who do I blame, Dan?
That's back to what you were.
I blame myself.
Uh-huh.
Then I'm trying to make myself guilty. Or
I know when you say myself, this is going to be part of your mind that gets healed. Mm-hmm. The self that is yourself that you might blame has no power over the situation at all. It's a victim because it's the you think you are, right? The self that you could blame. You have to recognize as the self with power, not the victim self. You want to blame something that has to do with separation and making a separate world where you could be a victim. That has no power, that one. That one's sitting in the same boat as you. Look at that's the ego. That's the ego in the world and all things of separation. Are all fantasy land separation, okay? That's the level. And unfortunately, we appeal to God making the world. Guess what? In A Course in Miracles, that's still all the same level of separation. A God who could make a world. Do you see where we're going? Where I think he was going? A Course in Miracles, we learn, starting with Miracle Principle 12 on page 3. Let's go look at that. Turn to page 3. River Principle 12. Right up front. First place it talks about levels. Trying to help dispel this deep addiction and drunkenness that we have. Separation. Right up front on page 3. You got that one, David?
Yeah.
You managed to highlight that yet?
Yeah, it's got some on it. Yeah.
Miracles are thoughts. Give it to us. Okay. Read it for us.
Miracles are thoughts. Thoughts can represent the lower or body level of experience, or the higher or spiritual level of experience. One makes the physical, and the other creates the spiritual.
One experience, thoughts, right? Level thoughts, makes the physical. Hello, welcome to planet Earth. Oh, you've arrived! Suck in the air, push the air back out soon, or you're going to choke. Hello, you're on Earth. The other, or the higher, or the spiritual level of experience, creates the spiritual. Welcome to freedom. Welcome to sharing. Welcome to no limits. Welcome to be an extension of God. So there's two levels right there. There are two voices throughout the book.
See, when I think of when people say they get mad at God, I say, they're not talking about the God that I know.
Good.
I am of that God, and I'm not the one. I'm not the one who's making anybody mad, even myself mad. Something else is. Something's got me, but it's not who I am.
If God, if that God that was referred to in the beginning of your sentence was really true, you'd be in a lot more pain than you are now.
Yeah.
I mean, think of the power of God. If God was mad at you, why would he stop at just making it uncomfortable?
See, that's why one of the reasons I've had trouble with the word forgiveness.
Yes?
Because as of God.
Yes?
God, I don't think, judges me ever.
Yes?
So if I'm judging myself, I'm not acting through the godliness of myself. I'm acting through something else. And that something else is, I mean, I'm asking it to forgive me. That's ridiculous.
Okay, A Course in Miracles has a nice sentence. You're going to absolutely laugh when you get there.
Okay.
Anybody complete this sentence for me? God does not forgive because...
For me, it would, God doesn't judge.
Yeah. He never condemned. Good.
And so part of me says, I don't have to forgive anything.
Right? Forgive what?
Exactly. Forgive what?
So is forgiveness then strictly a human thing?
Yep.
Because really, if you get well behind what you're saying, is, I mean, it's way more powerful than I think we can even say it, that God doesn't judge. Like, there's nothing to forgive. Like, when you get the extent of how... It's not even forgiveness, because there's nothing to forgive.
Exactly.
You know, that every human being, whether they're spiritual seekers or murderers or rapists or terrorists or whatever, it makes no difference.
Yeah. You'd have to have some guilt and some condemnation and some punishment being needed and some actual effects in order to need forgiveness to actually occur at all. You'd even have false thinking. And so, in heaven, there's no such thing as forgiveness.
So then...
Like, there's no need for miracles.
Given that...
Right.
God's point of view, it is not a personal thing. I keep trying to figure out prayer, for instance.
It's something we've learned.
You know, there'd be a version of praying to God for forgiveness, or praying to God for a change in perception, or whatever, but that's not God's thing.
Good.
But I have a hard time, really grasping that. Then I turn, John mentions turning to Holy Spirit all the time, and I keep taking that on. I think of you all the time, and I keep taking that on and taking that on, and that seems to make some difference. There's some...
Yes.
Of course, that's here, you know. Holy Spirit's right here, you know, but God, particularly the way we've been, you know, referring to him, she, whatever it is... It's so not personal, so I get confused about how to pray.
Well, we're going to hit that. It won't be anytime soon, I'm sorry.
About a year and a half. Come on, here we go.
I will not make any promises, but this book hits prayer big time in the clearest way of any published anything I've ever seen. What a gift. Do you have a book? Do you have a copy of Course in Miracles?
Yeah.
That's your copy right there?
Yeah.
And is that the third edition?
Yeah.
Okay, so in the very, very back, there's a thing called the Song of Prayer. Read section 2 of the Song of Prayer. It's only 100 pages. Read the whole thing. You'll love it. But there's a section in there that hits prayer, and it describes first in about 8, 10 or so pages what the ego thinks prayer is, which you'll say, oh yeah, I've been there. And then it switches to what A Course in Miracles, if Jesus, the Holy Spirit, would say prayer is.
Thank you for that.
So you're going to love it?
Yeah. Okay,
cool. Good. Okay. Student, heal myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Pam, would you go, everybody, go to page 49 in the text. And this is this little section called Creating versus the Self-Image, which hits right to what John was talking about.
Number one.
We're just going to read two paragraphs. So Pam, read the first one.
Creating versus the self-image. Every system of thought must have a starting point. It begins with either making or a creating, a difference we have already discussed. The resemblance lies in their power as foundations. Their difference lies in what rests upon them. Both are cornerstones for systems of belief by which one lives. It is a mistake to believe that a thought system based on lies is weak. Nothing.
Read that sentence again, please, because I'll tell you, one of the biggest gifts of A Course in Miracles is that what you are experiencing is real. It's just not true. Mm-hmm. It's powerful. It's just not love. And you actually want love. Please read that sentence again.
It is a mistake to believe that a thought system based on lies is weak.
Mm-hmm.
It is a mistake to believe that a thought system based on lies is weak.
Okay.
Because it's strong. That's
it's a thought system.
Yeah, because it's no joke.
It's a no joke.
Yeah, it's powerful. Yeah. Nothing made by a child of God is without power. It is essential to realize this, because otherwise you will be unable to escape from the prison you have made.
I love that little analogy, the prison, right? Little prison bars
that
you've made. You've made it.
Can I tell you about a dream I had one time?
Yeah, go ahead.
It was a waking kind of a dream. Mm-hmm. I don't remember my dreams very often, but this one was, mm-hmm. I was looking down on a prison,
mm-hmm.
and the roof was off, and so I saw all the little cells, and nobody was in the prison but me,
mm-hmm.
but the door to my little cell was open, and I could go to the front of the prison, and there was all kinds of machines there, you know, like you put money in and get a donut or whatever, mm-hmm. candy or mm-hmm. chips or whatever, so mm-hmm. absolute freedom to go anywhere I wanted in that prison.
Mm-hmm.
And then, way over in the top corner, mm-hmm. two guards came in with this big, strong man, mm-hmm. and he was struggling like mad.
Mm-hmm.
And they put him in a cell, and I just said, you know, if you quit fighting, you mm-hmm. don't have to, you can get out of your cell if you want to and go mm-hmm. around anywhere you want in that
mm-hmm.
prison.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
About noon that day after I woke up, that was the end of my dream, at noon, mm-hmm. I thought, oh my God, regardless of the, he's still in a prison.
Mm-hmm.
You need to fight it.
Yeah.
So what are you doing sitting there accepting being in a prison? That was, mm-hmm. oh jeez.
No, I've heard you say this before, and it's a good analogy to work with. So keep it up. Yeah, I like that. Okay, Stephen, number two.
You cannot resolve the authority problem by depreciating the power of your mind.
Okay, stop. The authority problem.
Authority problem.
This is a theme that the Course in Miracles, you know, builds up through chapter 4. It's pretty clever, isn't it? The authority problem. You know, you, the separation, you versus God. And the self, who are you going to blame? We're going to find somebody to blame for this problem because it hurts. There's definitely an authority problem going on here. Clever. This book is clever. Please continue.
You cannot resolve the authority problem by depreciating the power of your mind. To do so is to deceive yourself, and this will hurt you because you really understand the strength of the mind. You also realize that you cannot weaken it any more than you can weaken God. The devil is a frightening concept because he seems to be extremely powerful and extremely active. He is perceived as a force in combat with God, battling him for possession of his creation. the devil deceives by lies, and
builds
kingdoms in which everything is in direct opposition to God. Yet he attracts men rather than repels them, and they are willing to sell him their souls in return for gifts of no real worth.
Mm-hmm.
This makes absolutely no sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Good. Okay. Turn to workbook page 169. And, Julie, would you read for us paragraph 3?
Problems that have no meaning cannot be resolved within the framework they are set.
Oh, you got to read that sentence again, slowly.
What page is that?
This is page 169 in the workbook.
So this is salvation self comes from oneself.
Salvation comes from my oneself. My oneself.
59 or
59? 169.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Page 169 in the workbook.
Problems that have no meaning cannot be resolved within the framework they are set. Two selves in conflict could not be resolved. And good and evil have no meeting place. The self you made can never be your self, nor can your self be split in two and still be what it is and must forever be. A mind and body cannot both exist. Make no attempt to reconcile the two, for one denies the other can be real. If you are physical, your mind is gone from your self-concept, for it has no place in which it could really be a part of you. If you are spirit, then the body must be meaningless to your reality.
Boy, this is just answering Brother John here, up and down.
That is intense.
Carol, would you read that same paragraph so Julie can hear it?
Problems that have no meaning cannot be resolved within the framework they are set. Two selves in conflict could not be resolved, and good and evil have no meeting place. The self you made can never be yourself, nor can yourself be split in two and still be what it is and must forever be. The mind and body cannot both exist.
No, right?
Yeah. Make no attempt to reconcile the two, for one denies the other can be real. If you are physical, your mind is gone from your self-concept, for it has no place in which it could be really part of you. If you are spirit, then the body must be meaningless to your reality.
If you are physical, your mind is gone from your self-concept, for your mind has no place in which it could be really part of you. Do you see there's a particular problem with material identity? Let me explain it. Material things are made of dirt. From dirt they come, from dirt they return, and as dirt they remain. Where's there room for a spirit, a soul, happiness, joy, a loving being? A creator. Something to receive anything at all. If you are a body, which is made of dirt. Yeah. Oh. You want to see where else it talks about this? You're going to need a couple
of
fingers.
What are they saying the mind is here then?
Your true self.
Okay.
You are a thought in the mind of God. That's what you are not a body. You are a thought in the mind of truth. You are a mind. You are an extension of God's mind. It's what you actually are.
All right.
Not the body at all. Let's just take a peek at one of the fun places where the Course talks about this. We're coming right back here. Leave a finger. Go to page 660, paragraph 1 in the text. Coming right back here. Okay, 660.
Which paragraph?
Paragraph 1. Right in the middle of the page. Mm-hmm. I just love this. It's kind of funny. You know, it's like so in your face.
Uncircled.
Okay, Stephen, why don't you read that paragraph 1 for us?
You see the flesh.
Wait. Sorry, I meant Stephen.
You see the flesh or recognize the spirit. There is no compromise between the two. If one is real, the other must be false, for what is real denies its opposite. There is no choice in vision but this one. What you decide in this determines all you see and think is real and hold is true. On this one choice does all your world depend, for here you have established what you are as flesh or spirit in your own belief. If you choose flesh, you never will escape the body as your own reality, for you have chosen that you want it so. But choose the spirit, and all heaven bends to touch your eyes and bless your holy sight, that you may see the world of flesh no more, except to heal and comfort and to bless.
Come on, you gotta love that. You know, and Stephen, will you just continue for us and read paragraph 6 on the other page?
Are you invulnerable? Then the world is harmless in your sight. Do you forgive? Then is the world forgiving, for you have forgiven its trespasses, and so it looks on you with eyes that see as yours. Are you a body? So is all the world perceived as treacherous and out to kill. Are you a spirit, deathless and without the promise of corruption and the stain of sin upon you? So the world is seen as stable, fully worthy of your trust, a happy place to rest in for a while, where nothing need be feared but only love. Who is unwelcome to the kind in heart? And what could hurt the truly innocent?
How about that for a flip? Are you body? Life sucks. Are you a spirit? You can go through life with a sense of invulnerability. Might even be fun. If your body...
Sounds good in the telling.
Yes. Okay. Thanks for that little adventure. Please back to 169 in the workbook. 169 in the workbook. And I think, Luann, you're up with paragraph 4.
Spirit make use of mind as means to find self-expression. And the mind which serves the spirit is at peace and filled with joy. Its power comes from spirit, and it's fulfilling happily its function here. Yet mind can also see itself divorced from spirit and perceive itself within a body it confuses with itself. Without its function that it has no peace, and happiness is alien to its thoughts.
Brother John, 5.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please.
About that one?
Yeah.
I have separated in my idea of mind and brain.
Yep.
But they're not the same thing.
Good.
So when it says, where did I read? Yet mind can also see itself divorced from spirit. I would have said, yet my brain can see itself divorced from spirit. Not necessarily my mind.
Yeah, I think this could stay after this line of analysis on your experience. Indeed, there's a difference between brain and mind. Brain, I believe, as you will go along with your coursework, becomes closer and closer to just being a body part, like
well,
a physical,
I think it is.
Like
it's
an organ, right?
Part.
It doesn't even think. It has no theories. It has no concepts.
Okay.
It might hold memories. It might throw you pictures.
Okay.
It's an organ.
Okay.
Okay. So the part of the mind that would make sense of the pictures and give it emotions to them, that's the mind, the separated mind.
Okay.
But it's hard to know the difference when the neurons are firing and the thought patterns occur real because, number one, they're very familiar. Number two, you could probably tell a story about how you got that way or how those thoughts
Is that a choice then of letting your mind believe, make up those stories? Is that a choice? Maybe that is the choice.
John over here, John, that's a thumbs up. John over here said, look, he says, the key to this whole thing is attack is never justified in any form. That's what he said, starting the meeting. Remember that?
Uh-huh.
That's what it looks like. Just for one example, there are hundreds of ways to stop your mind from following the stories. As I said earlier, do not follow your ego. It will lead you into trouble. No. See your ego spinning and turning and believing its own lies, its own stories.
And that came out from, they come from your past.
And your past, and your pattern, and your habits.
What you've learned from your family.
What you think is true. So that you know something from your past that isn't true. You're in trouble.
Okay.
You know what?
When I come up with a story, I can say, there's my mind giving into my body.
There's my mind rehearsing the past, giving into my body and its patterns. I will wake up from that.
I don't have to choose that story or that way of being.
Lesson 34.
I haven't gotten that far yet.
Oh, all right then. You're going to love it when you get there.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
So, number 5?
Yes, please.
Yet mind apart from spirit cannot think.
No!
Uh-oh, it gets more complicated, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
It has denied its source of strength and sees itself as helpless, limited, and weak. Dissociated from its function now, it thinks it is alone, separate, attacked by armies massed against itself and hiding in the body's frail support. Now must it reconcile and life with life, for this is what it thinks that it is for.
That's what it thinks its job is to unlike and like and make differences. There's me and there's everything else. Separation is full swing. We're here to awaken from that form of survival. Okay, we better get to tonight's reading. We can go all night on this. I love talking about this, these levels. But take a look at page 411 in the text. And paragraph 15, right in the middle of the page, on page 411 in the text.
You're up, Andrew.
I'm up. Thanks. If you send forth only the messengers of the Holy Spirit gives you, wanting no messages but theirs, you will see fear no more. The world will be transformed before your sight, cleansed of all guilt and softly brushed with beauty. The world contains no fear that you laid not upon it. And none you cannot ask love's messengers to remove from it and see it still. The Holy Spirit has given you his messengers to send to your brother and return to you with what love sees. They've been given to replace the hungry dogs of fear you sent instead. And love's messengers go forth to signify the end of fear. Whew. Here comes the reversal and how it's done. It's the choosing of peace. It's the forgiveness in your mind where you would choose to stop the darkening contractions. Catch them. You know what it feels like. You stop it. You stop the bad storytelling and you go to the good storytelling. Oh yeah, I could choose peace instead of this. It really is a using the power of your mind to choose up instead of down.
I think for me it's the power of my mind to choose to follow the Holy Spirit's guidance rather than any thought that I have.
That's it?
That's what it feels like.
That's right. We're just learning how to listen to the Holy Spirit. Because the ego's got some pretty good ideas too on how to make you happy. And they're in the same mind.
Well, it might be true, but so far my ego hasn't made me very happy, but my Holy Spirit guides certainly has.
Let's follow that one instead. Yes, good. And then you will teach how to follow it by following it yourself. Yes, good, good, good. Turn to...
We're going away from our chapter again.
Well, we're
going
to study it in depth by looking elsewhere.
The next paragraph I got all pink and...
Oh, yeah. Well, we might even hit that tonight.
Okay.
Yes. Look at workbook page 249.
Workbook.
Workbook page 249. We're just going to read three paragraphs out of here, three or four paragraphs out of here. See, this is, let me perceive forgiveness as it is. As it really is.
Oh, thank you.
Are we not going to visit 401 in the workbook? That's one of my favorite sections.
Are we? Yeah.
Is it too obvious?
It is a beautiful section on forgiveness. Yeah, is it too... well, you know, it's kind of topic is up. All right, we'll have you read it for us.
Are we about to read 8, 9, and 10?
Yeah, we're going to read 6, 6 through 11, baby, the whole page.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
That's kind of a miracle.
David, would you start reading for us paragraph 6 on page 249?
It is sin's unreality that makes forgiveness natural and wholly sane. A deep relief for those who offer it. A quiet blessing where it is received. It does not countenance illusions, but collects them lightly. A little laugh and gently lays them at the feet of truth, and there they disappear entirely.
Mm-hmm. Look like a Carol described forgiveness, how lightly and with a laugh when you wake up from your condemning thoughts. Oh, I don't have to do this. I could actually look at this peacefully and it just feels better. Pam.
Forgiveness is the only thing that stands for truth in the illusions of the world. It sees their nothingness and looks straight through the thousand forms in which they may appear. Mm-hmm. It looks on lies, but it is not deceived. It does not heed the self-accusing shrieks of sinners mad with guilt. It looks on them with quiet eyes and merely says to them, "My brother, what you think is not the truth."
And Julie, do you remember 401, your favorite sentence?
Well... I like all of 401.
Yeah, okay. I just wondered if you, because you know, there's a sentence that you will, since you love that page, there will be a couple of sentences that will pop out and will be your universal application of what forgiveness is. Forgiveness merely
does nothing.
Yeah, looks on devastation and sees that it is not. Does nothing. Merely does nothing. Yeah, we'll get there. We'll read it ourselves later. Okay, now. Isn't this beautiful? Isn't this a wonderful forgiveness passage? Now, 8, Stephen.
The strength of pardon is its honesty, which is so uncorrupted that it sees illusions as illusions, not as truth. It is because of this that it becomes the undeceiver in the face of lies, the great restorer of the simple truth. By its ability to overlook what is not there, it opens up the way to truth, which has been blocked by dreams of guilt. Now are you free to follow in the way your true forgiveness opens up to you. Mm-hmm. For if one brother has received this gift of you, the door is open to yourself.
That's how you go through. Stephen, that's how you go through. Beautiful, beautiful. Julie?
There is a very simple way to find the door to true forgiveness and perceive it open wide and welcome. When you feel that you are tempted to accuse someone of sin in any form, do not allow your mind to dwell on what you think he did, for that is self-deception. Instead, ask instead, would I accuse myself of doing this?
The answer might be yes.
Until you really understand the question and you get really personal with it and take it into meditation.
Oh, boy.
It's one of the most confusing sentences in the whole book.
I mean...
You know, for a lot of people. But it's so simple when you get it.
There's only one.
Right.
You are. You are
yeah.
doing that to yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like you could say, would we accuse us of doing this?
It's a call for compassion.
Or would you accuse the extensions of God of doing this?
It's a little smaller than that, and it's smaller than what Julie's going to also. It's more practical. The workbook is super practical, by the way. We're in the workbook right now, and in this reading, and the workbook is really, really practical on how to deal with your life today, with knowing that you're a separated one. The text is teasing you and showing you a bigger picture and to trust the author. Workbook says, let's go do the work and pry you off of your ego. So what you said is correct, but you're overreaching.
Well, I think I'm on lesson 23 or 22.
Okay, you're really kicking butt here.
The thing is this how I really want to think this?
Right.
And then the answer is always no. When I think of a situation and I read those four sentences, I'm thinking, of course not.
Good.
Of course not.
Good. Yeah. That's good. Good. You bet. And there's no going back. You're waking yourself up. There's no going back.
I plan on doing.
Yeah. Anyway, so
I planned on doing that when I came here.
Good. Well, then let's get your money's worth.
What money? It's free.
So instead of you damning your brother, you might choose to wake up for a minute, gather some compassion, and ask yourself, would I condemn myself for doing this if it was you who was doing that? Wake up! Anyway, I'm not going to go too much time on that because it's such a great discovery for you. Okay. Next paragraph. Who's up?
That's where you see alternatives for choice in terms that render choosing meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And keep your mind as free of guilt and pain as God Himself intended it to be, and as it is in truth.
Mm-hmm.
It is but lies that would condemn.
Mm-hmm.
In truth is innocence the only thing there is.
In truth is innocence the only thing there is. You seeing it, Julie?
Oh, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Please continue.
Forgiveness stands between illusions and the truth, between the world you see and that which lies beyond, between the hell of guilt and heaven's gate.
Mm-hmm.
The writing is so astounding.
It's astounding.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's layers of teaching in what we just read. More than just one level of teaching, for sure. And yet it's still one paragraph. Yeah. Stefan.
Across this bridge, as powerful as love which laid its blessing on it, are all dreams of evil and of hatred and attack brought silently to truth. They are not kept to swell and bluster and to terrify the foolish dreamer who believes in them. He has been gently wakened from his dream by understanding what he thought he saw was never there. And now he cannot feel that all escape has been denied to him.
Yes. It's describing the path of forgiveness.
That's a miracle.
That's a miracle, buddy! Absolutely. Okay, we're running down the last 15 minutes, so we're going to have to skip Julie's beautiful 401, but we shall return to 401, no doubt, many times.
Okay.
All right.
12 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah. Next time we discuss forgiveness, we'll certainly go to 401. Yes. Okay. Paragraph 16 on page 411 in the text. I mean 15. We've got to finish 15. Yeah, we're not going to get to 16 tonight. Look up your top. Paragraph 15 on page 411. Okay, so sentence 2. The world will be transformed before your sight, cleansed of all guilt, and softly brushed with beauty. How does that happen? If you send forth love's messengers instead of fear's messengers. Your mind will actually see love, like we just described with forgiveness that Stefan just read for us. It actually works that way. Go to the very back of the book, manual, page 86, where it describes this little transformation.
Can we leave our fingers off of this part now?
Nope, you gotta leave your finger there. Okay. I'm optimistic we'll come right back. But oh my God, this is such a great couple of paragraphs.
Where are we at now?
Now in the back of the book.
The
manual for teachers, 86.
86?
86. 86.
There's almost none of the book left.
There's almost none of the book left when you get there. Yeah.
Just Jesus Christ stuff.
Yeah, just that. Yeah, a little topic there. Little topic. We left the bat. Luanne, you up to bat? Paragraph 6.
Yes. This is it. I have this heavily underlined, so we must have been here a couple of times before.
Well, it might have happened.
This is the shift that true perception brings. What was projected out is seen within, and their forgiveness lets it disappear.
See, now, what you might even underline that word was, so the next time you read it, you go, ha, what was projected out is seen within. Mm. You see that circle coming right back. Please continue.
For there the altar is to the Son is set, and there his Father is remembered. Here are all illusions brought to truth and laid upon the altar. What is seen outside must lie beyond forgiveness, for it seems to be forever sinful. Where is hope while sin is seen as outside? What remedy can guilt expect? But seen within your mind, guilt and forgiveness for an instant lie together, side by side upon one altar. There at last are a sickness and its single remedy, joined in one healing brightness. God has come to claim his own. Forgiveness is complete.
Oh, yeah. Mm. But
that answers what I mentioned earlier about if I'm projecting this, I don't want to feel guilty about doing that.
Yeah.
And so this answers it perfectly. They lay side by side guilt and forgiveness on the altar, and then in a flash of light,
yes,
the guilt.
I swear this meeting is for you tonight. Yeah.
A lot of this is resonating.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Absolutely. Good. I mean, the rest of this page is good. But you see, there it is, describing that circle and your participation. Okay, turn back to page 411, paragraph 15. We got to farm a little bit more, milk a little more out of this paragraph before we move on to that sweet paragraph 16. But 15 still has some information for us. Sentence 3 on paragraph 15 on page 411. It says, the world contains no fear. At least no fear that you didn't put on it. Right? It's innocent. The world is innocent. It does contain fear that only you could put on it. Pressing your own buttons. And no fear that you cannot ask love's messengers to remove from it. And see it still see the world after its transformation. We at least got to be part of this. Turn to, I think it's workbook 360 or 359. This is amazing. We haven't done this in a long time. Seen this one. 359. I mean, this is just so beautiful. Okay? Because what we're talking about now is choosing love instead of fear, instead of hate, instead of guilt, and seeing what happens. The essence of forgiveness is to actually release the judgment. And then just see how it happens. So look at this beautiful lesson, 189, okay? On page 359 in the workbook. Let's read Let's try to read, at least the first four paragraphs. Who's up to bat?
John.
Brother John.
Sure. So, I feel the love of God within me now.
Yes.
Okay. There is a light in you the world cannot perceive, and with its eyes you will not see this light, for you are blinded by the world. Yet you have eyes to see it. It is there for you to look upon. It was not placed in you to be kept hidden from your sight. This light is a reflection of the thought we practice now. To feel the love of God within you is to see the world anew, shining in innocence, alive with hope, and blessed with perfect charity and love.
Who could feel fear in such a world as this? It welcomes you, rejoices that you came, and sings your praises as it keeps you safe from every form of danger and of pain. It offers you a warm and gentle home in which to stay a while. It blesses you throughout the day and watches through the night as silent guardian of your holy sleep. It sees salvation in you and protects the light in you in which it sees its own. It offers you its flowers and its snow in thankfulness for your benevolence.
This is the world the love of God reveals. It is so different from the world you see through darkened eyes of malice and of fear that one belies the other. Only one can be perceived at all. The other one is wholly meaningless. The world in which forgiveness shines is on everything, and peace offers its gentle light to everyone. It is inconceivable to those who see a world of hatred rising from attack, poised to avenge, to murder, and destroy.
Pam.
Yet is the world of hatred equally unseen and inconceivable to those who feel God's love in them. Their world reflects the quietness and peace that shines in them, the gentleness and innocence they see surrounding them, the joy in which they look out from the endless wells of joy within. What they have felt in them, they look upon and see its sheer reflection everywhere.
Stephen.
What would you see? The choice is given you.
What would you see? What would you prefer to see? Please continue.
But learn and do not let your mind forget this law of seeing. You will look upon that which you feel within. If hatred finds a place within your heart, you will perceive a fearful world, held cruelly in death's sharp-pointed, bony fingers. If you feel the love of God within, you will look out on a world of mercy and of love.
Could be, we're going to stop right there. It is a wonderful lesson. The entire thing, every word of it, is a wonderful, beautiful lesson. But isn't, do you see how it's encouraging you to use love's messengers instead of fear's or hate's messengers? Yes.
I had 13 years of that once.
13 years? Did you?
It was easy. That's 13 years.
Nice.
It was a wonderful 13 years. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been looking to get back to that ever since.
Okay, sentence 6.
And number 15.
And number 15. These love's messengers.
Do you mean on the next page?
411.
Actually, oh. Sorry, back on page 411 in the... In the text, 411. These messengers of love that you would send out. These love's messengers.
You know the part of that I like when the way they've written it. They have been given.
Mm-hmm.
The messengers have been given to us. It's not that we have to go searching for them. They're there.
Yes.
That's what makes it easy.
Nice.
It's just recognizing they're there already.
Yes. Innocence is the only thing that's true. Putting the perspective of seeking for innocence, it will lead you to compassion quite quickly, no matter what's going on. When you understand, would I blame myself for doing that if it was I doing that? You might be able to see a road to compassion there. Oh, it busts the heart wide open when you see a call for love. When you see the fear that is driving somebody to do something ugly, when you see that that's a call for love, when you see that circle completing, it tends to open the heart wide up. First for them, and then for you. It's a road. It is a road to change the entire world from a horrible, horrible place into a place where you will find love. Yeah. Okay, well, yeah. Those messengers have been given, thank you, Luann, to replace the hungry dogs of fear that you sent instead. And those messengers go forth to signify the end of fear. Now, before we move on, actually, this will be the last thing we read before we go to this beautiful chapter, paragraph 16 next week. Let's go back and rehearse right here on page 410, paragraph 12. Brother John, would you read that for us?
Relationship. Excuse me. Relationships in this world are the result of how the world is seen. And this depends on which emotion was called on to send its messengers to look upon it and return with word of what they saw. Fear's messengers are trained through terror, and they tremble when their master calls on them to serve him. For fear is merciless even to its friends. Its messengers steal guiltily away in hungry search of guilt, for they are kept cold and starving and made very vicious by their master, who allows them to feast only upon what they return to him. No little shred of guilt escapes their hungry eyes, and in their savage search for sin, they pounce on any living thing they see and carry it screaming to their master to be devoured. That is so cool.
That was pretty well read, too. I mean, doesn't he kind of feel the, you could feel the threat going on there. So can you relate to ever having thoughts in your own mind where you were so hungry to justify your anger that you sent out the fierce message to see just how bad this person really is? How much trouble can I really get in here? It's worse than I thought! Oh!
And then you tell one person after another just how bad it is.
And then we go tell for some, get some support, and they'll give you some...
Commiserate.
Wow. Misery loves
that
company.
That is support, isn't it?
Commiserate. Misery loves company. True. Mm-hmm. It just brings more misery, though. That's the only problem with that. Yeah, the messengers, you send them out, they'll come back, for sure. You trained them. And they're like hungry dogs. Hungry dogs want to be fed, and you own them. So the ego would send out the hungry dogs of guilt, and they will not come back until they've got something for which you will give them a nice pat on the head and a chunk of meat. And that is, you were right to be afraid. You were right to cast the anger, guilt, and fear. These are your own thoughts, you creator you. You mistaken creator you.
It's like you're desperate to build a case.
Yes.
Against your enemies.
Yes, exactly right.
It's like in the courtroom. They're looking for any kind of piece of evidence that's going to support the general theory.
Yes. Perfect analogy. Desperate to build a case against your enemy with clever phrases and facts and painting a picture where you'd end up with them in a prison that you feel is appropriate for them. And as the Course describes, you do this to yourself too. And your thoughts turn back to you and you paint yourself into a little prison. In the exact same way, at the exact same measure.
But when I'm finding more and more, we read a paragraph and I thought, that's what I do most of the time. And that is, I get those thoughts back and then I start laughing. Because what else can you do besides laugh at? It's so ridiculous. You have to laugh at them, you know? It's somebody read that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's rather like a dog chasing its own tail. Have you ever see a dog do that? Let's have a circle. All right, take a deep breath.
Okay.
So you send out messengers. You send out messengers of fear. You get fear back. And it wants to be appreciated for the fear that it found. You send out messengers of love. You get love back. It wants to be appreciated for what it found.
Oh, God. That's great.
And both of those are choices.
Yes. And if you find yourself caught, if you find yourself constricted where you feel you're not free, or you feel it's too late, something bad happening, It's time to forgive. It's time to call on the part of your mind that would then just release with trust that it's going to be a lot better if you do this. Choose peace. Step back. Take a breath. Do that when you feel the contraction. And then you'll watch what messengers are sending out from that point. And the whole world changes because you've changed what you're willing to see. You're busting the ego. Thank you, thank you. Amen.
Amen.
Hey, all right. I wanted to let you know, our band.
Wait.
When is that? When is that happening?
You'll be about 65.
Usually missing about 5 minutes. Like that. I have. And this is open.
Yeah,
buy
her dinner.